Child, touch my soul with your cries, and the music will know what we found. I hear a hundred goodbyes, but today I hear only one sound. The moment we're living is now. No.
Welcome back to the Bruce Salin Show with Dad's Point of View. You can email me questions at bruce@brucesalin.com. That's Bruce and Salin, S-A-L-L-A-N. I have a special guest today, Derek Green. It's his first time on my show. Possibly he will come back if he has a good time. Mr. Green has received an M.A. in Theological Studies from the Fuller Theological Seminary. He's currently pursuing his doctorate in ministry at Azusa Pacific University. He is married, but as of this moment, without children. He's waiting until he finishes his doctorate, or at least that's the excuse he gave me. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. So you do know what Azusa stands for, right?
You know, I've been told it stands for something to the effect of everything in the USA between A and Z or something to that effect.
Yeah, it's exactly, that is what it is.
Okay.
And that's how they created the name. And I think it's as clever a name as any other.
That's right.
I enjoy it. So a lot's been going on in the world lately, as you and I talked briefly earlier today. And you have a pretty interesting story about some recent remarks that were made by the NAACP president. I'd love you to tell the story, and I've only heard a little bit, so I may have some questions along the way. Why don't you share it with my audience?
Sure. Ben Jealous, who is the president of the NAACP, the CEO and president, was speaking on a panel at the Netroots Nation conference last month in San Jose. And what Netroots conference is, it's a convention where far left activists, bloggers, things of that nature get together and they figure out how they are best at informing or influencing public debate. And so on this panel, the panel was discussing voter ID, and this panel actually happened prior to the Supreme Court's decision last week. And while on the panel, Ben Jealous said that voter ID laws are discriminatory against the transgendered because the transgendered dress differently when they go out to play versus the way they dress when they go to work. And to support his argument, he drew on the example of his adopted brother who happens to be transgendered. And so he says that because of the differences of the way they dress and the way they look, we shouldn't implement voter ID laws because we don't want to discriminate against this class of people. Now, the problem with that is that statistically,
it's almost comical. I mean, I'm listening to you and I'm going, is this for real or is this a Saturday Night Live skit?
Right, right. And he said it. And if anybody wants to see it, it's on the internet. He said it with all seriousness. And when I saw it, I laughed, and I thought to myself, in this insaner times, you know, Ben Jealous would have been ridiculed and mocked off of the panel right then and there. But you just hear the silence and the nodding of heads. And, you know, he wants to do away with voter ID laws, which, you know, at their heart, at the root, try to prevent voter fraud and corruption.
You know, let me interrupt you for a minute.
Yeah, sure.
I must be dumb, because I don't understand it. I need ID to do anything in life.
Mm-hmm.
I need ID to drive. I need ID to buy liquor. I need ID to get cigarettes. I need ID to go on an airplane. Why does anyone object to showing ID to prove you're a legitimate citizen? I don't even understand the objection other than wanting to implement voter fraud.
And that's the key. It's so absurd. Like you said, we need IDs to accomplish various tasks in American life on a day-to-day basis. So to suggest that somehow those actions which require ID aren't discriminatory, but to show one when you go vote is to me at the height of silliness.
And hypocrisy.
Right, exactly. And so one can only suggest, based off of this particular stance and many other stances that the NAACP, Ben Jealous, or Eric Holder, or anybody else has taken, that they seem to want to encourage corruption if they are standing against fighting it.
It seems clear as day to me, but obviously
right.
they feel otherwise. Now, may I ask you if you are a colored person, a Negro, a Black, or an African-American, or whatever it is that is politically correct to call you right now?
Well, I prefer Black American. That's about as close to the political correctness that I dare to go.
Okay, so by being of that persuasion, you do have, to me, an additional credibility to question what this man, Ben, expressed. I don't think that that should ever limit what we say about one another if it's the truth, whether you happen to be part of the group or not. But
right.
It seems that that does impact certainly white people making any comments about black people. But nonetheless, I just wanted to establish that at least on that level, you have a credibility. But it also brings the political correctness question further to the forefront in my mind. Why is there an NAACP anymore? And let's not forget what NAACP stands for. Those last two letters are colored people. And ironically, in spite of political correctness, they haven't changed it to N-quadruple-A. National
right.
Association for American African Americans. Or
right.
I mean, I guess that would be political correct. It should be NAAAA. But they've kept colored people, which is so interesting given the political nature and what the NAACP was when it began and what it's become in the last decade. So your thoughts on its relevance?
Well, I think it's by taking this particular stance in conjunction with several others, I think that the NAACP has deviated so far from their initial mission. I think that they have actually become an abomination as it relates to civil rights. You know, I think that back in 64, 65, when we had major legislation that was passed that actually brought black Americans into the mainstream of American society, you know, they realized their mission, and they should be celebrated for that. But it seems to me, since then, specifically in the last 10 or so years, the NAACP has taken some questionable stances on particular issues that seem to me to be, you know, not necessarily having the best interests of their constituents at heart. And I think the stances that they have taken kind of reflect their far leftward push, and they reflect more of a political organization rather than an organization concerned with civil rights.
Or so concerned with the welfare of their constituency. Because it seems to me so many of the left, far left policies are ironically damaging to the very people that they claim to want to help.
That's right. And for whatever reason, they're not being openly called on that reality. They're definitely not going to be called on that by the majority of black Americans, but just people of all hues, regardless of the color. Truth is truth, no matter who says it. And for them to, you know, continually hide behind the pretense of civil rights while they're taking stances, for example, on gay marriage, they're in favor of same-sex marriage. Now,
even though the majority of black Americans are not.
That not only are they not for gay marriage, the marriage rates in the black community are falling.
Right.
So they're
right.
not, you know, they're not even encouraging marriage amongst their own constituency while taking a stance to redefine marriage as we all understand it.
So the big question, ironically to me, is why do none of these organizations, it's not just the NAACP, why do none of them hit the point where they go, you know something, mission accomplished, goodbye. Because it seems to me when it was formed, there was a meaningful mission, as you've said, in the 60s. And I also wonder, what would Martin Luther King say about what the NAACP is standing for now?
You know, I think that Martin Luther King would be shocked. I think, again, with the stances that they want to take that go against, you know, their mission, their history, their heritage, their constituency, I think that he would be shocked that they would take these stances that are actually not even against the best interests of their constituency. They're detrimental to them. But I think the reason that they don't say enough is enough because, you know, they're trying to maintain relevancy, and I think the positions that they take, some of the things that they say, are so internalized that to say that their mission is accomplished is kind of self-defeating for them. So
well, obviously, personally, it would put them out of a job. But I have
exactly.
another question about black leadership. Okay, this is what makes me crazy. When Rwanda was going on, and literally millions of black human beings were being slaughtered in the most ugly, horrible ways, it seemed there was no meaningful outcry from any black leadership. They're concerned about Trayvon Martin, And we'll hear Al Sharpton, you know, accuse Jews of all kinds of horrible things. But when blacks are killing blacks, not only in our own inner cities, in horrible numbers, but in other countries like Africa, when we have Rwanda and other ongoing things like in the Congo, where the heck are they?
You know, they are sitting on the sidelines doing their best to ignore it.
We're talking about genocides. We're not talking about a murder here and there. We're not talking about one incident between two people like Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, whatever your stance is. We're talking about millions of people being slaughtered.
And not only that, when their claims of racism in America fall on deaf ears, when racism and slavery still happen on the continent of Africa.
Exactly.
You know, Arab Muslims still own black slaves.
It's unbelievable.
But there's no outcry from Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton or the NAACP or the Congressional Black Caucus or Louis Farrakhan, because there's no political capital
for them personally.
Exactly. So there's only political capital holding whites accountable for projections
and making blacks feel that they're still being discriminated on to an excessive degree beyond reality.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously there's still racism, but it's just so far limited to what it was. My other complaint in this area, which does not relate to the NAACP or black activism, is feminism. Where the heck are the feminists when there are mutilations of girls going on throughout the Muslim world and the African world? Where the heck are the feminists? Let's talk about the feminists just looking at the whole Muslim world in general, where women are by far mistreated. They will find problems everywhere here in the U.S. where women actually are outpacing men in almost every field these days. Except maybe sports, but the horrors that go on in the world, where is Gloria Steinem? Where are the women feminists? They nowhere to be found. We can do clitorectomies by the thousands and mutilate young girls, black and otherwise, but where the heck are the feminists?
You know, and that to me, that shows kind of, you know, it goes to their intent, it goes to their integrity, that they would rather fight for a woman's right to choose whether or not to kill her preborn child than to save, you know, thousands upon millions of women from genital mutilation and other horrors that go on, you know, in second and third world
forced
countries.
Forced marriages, so all the other things,
honor killing,
including the nonsense of late-term abortion. I mean, I can't even believe that's an issue anymore with what we know scientifically. Listen, we are out of time, Derek. Where can my listeners find you?
They can go to derekgreen.net, and that's spelled D-E-R-R. YCK, green like the color, .net, and I try to update that, and then they can also go to project21.org, and they can see pretty much everything that I've contributed to Project 21 since I've been a part of such a great organization.
For my listeners, Project 21 is where we got Sherilyn Laban, who is not with us this week, and that's why we got Derek, and I'm very grateful to having had you on the show. Thank you very much. We will be back with, in fact, another member of Project 21 after this commercial break.
Day in and day out, the busy of living, to worry about a thing called love. But when I see a mother's tenderness as she holds her young close to her breast, then I thank God this world's been blessed with a thing called love.